youth in our community. And we have per capita funding from Modesto Junior College, a grant of money from our Workforce Investment Board, our local Workforce Investment Board, and then a variety of in-kind contributions from MJC, the Alliance WorkNet, and the Community Services Agency. And with that, I'll turn it over to George.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, it's a pleasure to be here tonight on behalf of the faculty, staff, and administration of Modesto Junior College, and especially alongside our long-term partners, the Alliance WorkNet and Community Services Agency. We've done so many good things over the years with these two fine agencies, and we're proud to be here again. What we have here, what is the bridge? This is a project, if you go to the next screen, please. This is a 12-unit, four-credit college preparation program. In essence, it is a bridge to college for these young people that we're going to be serving. It's an intensive one-semester class schedule delivered in a learning community format, which is essentially all the supports needed for the youth in a cohort of 25 individuals that will be going through this simultaneously. There'll be employment training services from our partners, life skills development while they're going through the classes, supportive services from both CSA and Alliance WorkNet, and then most importantly, perhaps, is the gateway to high-wage career pathways. The charge here is to bridge to college, but in essence, we're also going to bridge to careers for these young people, getting them out of the situation that they're currently in. Next screen, please. The purpose would be to integrate post-secondary workforce and social services resources, as we are describing, to create a systematic approach to emancipating foster youth and other disadvantaged youth for self-sufficiency. That is really the goal here. And then to provide post-secondary education and vocational training leading to careers in high-wage, high-growth industries in Stanislaus County. Those are our purposes. And our goals are numerous, but the keys here would be to ensure basic needs for safe and stable housing, food, transportation, and such. If young people cannot see these things taken care of, learning cannot happen. So what we're building here is a true bridge with full support to make sure that these young people can focus on learning while taking care of their other social needs. Coordinating employment services, providing tutoring, study skills, career orientation, and educational counseling simultaneous with the learning going on in the classroom. This is critical to this effort. Expanding local partnerships, of course, in terms of what we have with these three agencies involved, and then improving employment and training and post-secondary options for these foster youth and disadvantaged youth. The integrated support services include these items, including instructional aids right in the classroom, the extended opportunity programs and services program of MJC will be overseeing this activity day to day, and they are used to doing this for thousands of youth who are disadvantaged already. So we're using the expertise of the program that already exists on campus, assistance with financial aid, dedicated Alliance WorkNet case management, and also social workers from CSA who will be overseeing the cases individually for these youth that have so much to gain from this program. The bridge startup begins quickly. May 8th is our start date for the first cohort of 25 youth, and that will continue through August. It's basically a 14-week program. And then the second bridge will be 25 participants starting in September through December. Now, what is important to note as well is that there's a sustainability issue here, and that is that the funding sources expect us to continue this program beyond these two cohorts. So Modesto Junior College is making the effort now to put in place an ongoing fall and spring program for cohorts of youth in the disadvantaged and foster youth categories indefinitely. And that's where we're headed with this project.
Okay. We do have some outcomes that we're going to be measuring this project by, and depending on our success in those outcomes, the decision about whether or not we'll continue after the grant funding is gone will be made. One of the general outcomes is to increase the percentage of emancipated foster youth who enroll in and are successful in post-secondary education and vocational training programs, and increase opportunities for higher wage career and employment, thus decreasing homelessness, poverty, and criminal activity among the foster youth population and increasing self-sufficiency by 24 years of age for these youth. I want to emphasize that the goal and the emphasis to the kids are going to be towards vocational training programs and these high-wage, high-career jobs that are going to help lead to self-sufficiency, and those are generally short-term type of certificate programs. However, if we do have youth in the program that want to go on for a college degree and seem to be appropriate, we're obviously not going to stand in their way. But the emphasis is on more of a quick turnaround, get them in these jobs that are coming into the community where they can make a living wage and be successful in life. Other evaluation outcomes is we want to graduate through this pilot program a minimum of 40 youth, and out of those 40, we want 80% of them to actually graduate from the program, and 80% of them actually either be placed in a job, one of these high-wage jobs that we're talking about, or in continued education. And that wraps up our presentation. We're asking you to authorize the implementation of this bridge program and to approve a contract between the county, Alliance WorkNet, and MJC to provide the instructional services and counseling for this program. And we'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you, Jeff. Any question from board members?
Mr. Chairman. Is this a program associated with the Pathways program? I've visited one place where they had something like this already. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not familiar with the Pathways program.
Was it a college campus?
No, it was residences for emancipated youth that came out of foster care, and they were going to school and I think working too. It was a similar program. It looked like a really successful program. The best I can remember, it was called Pathways. I went out to visit them.
That was in this county?
Oh, yeah. It was in Modesto. I just don't recall. It was a program I really liked, and I've never been one much for social programs, but there was this one where kids that were in foster care, and then they're 18, and they're out in the street, and this was a transitional program to help them for a while while they went to school and got their lives together, because otherwise they'd be out in the street.
That would be a Center for Human Services program and as a target for our recruitment effort for this program.
I am familiar with that program, and we actually are partnering with them to help. They have a transitional housing component, so we would be partnering with them to help provide the housing for these kids while they're going to school.
Yeah, so that was... That's a really good program, because without that, I don't think these kids would have a chance.
Absolutely.
Any other questions? Okay, we need a motion for authorization of the implementation of the program.
Mr. Chairman, I will move that we accept the staff recommendations and authorize the program.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion is second. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, item B11, approval for the expansion of the county enterprise zone.
Mr. Chairman, on this item, I do have a conflict of interest, as this expansion will include the area of O'Brien's Market and Riverbank.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Chairman Simon, members of the board. Keith Boggs, Deputy Executive Officer, Economic Development. Joining me this evening is Mr. Ron Freitas, Director of County Planning. Also in attendance is Doug Sweetland, Stanislaus Enterprise Zone 40 Administrator, and representatives from each of the zone expansion applicant jurisdictions. This is an action item, and we are here to request consideration for two recommendations tonight. First, to adopt a resolution initiating the expansion of the Stanislaus County Enterprise Zone, Zone 40, by approximately 5,472 acres, consistent with board-approved expansion criteria, and to authorize staff to prepare and submit a zone expansion application to the State of California Housing and Community Development Agency. As you all know, the Stanislaus County Enterprise Zone was approved and activated in November of last year, 2005. In that approval action, over 67,508 acres in unincorporated Stanislaus County and the cities of Ceres, Modesto, and Turlock were identified as the newest California Enterprise Zone, Zone Number 40. In accordance with the State Enterprise Zone law, up to 15% of total zone designation can be sought for zone expansion purposes. In the Stanislaus instance, this equates to approximately 10,126 possible expansion acres. On February 7 of this year, this board approved an expansion criteria prepared by county economic development staff with input from all zone partner jurisdictions. This streamlined yet specified expansion criteria includes review of business interest within a proposed expansion area, review of community support and commitment, including a resolution from the participant city council, and review of land eligibility, which specifically looks at the status of infrastructure in the expansion area, availability, readiness to proceed to develop. As a request for proposals was published to all communities in late February, after the expansion protocol was approved, and five expansion requests have been received in this first phase and are before you this evening. These include the city of Ceres, which would be number one here on your map, additional zone expansion, the city of Modesto and parts of unincorporated Stanislaus County in a joint application effort, which would be number two, the cities of Patterson, number three, Riverbank area identified as number four, and Turlock, number five. The Ceres request of 132 acres includes two development projects and commercial and industrial properties along portions of the Mitchell Road area. All properties are in the Ceres city limit. All sewer and water infrastructures are available with capacity to serve the entire Mitchell Road area into the future. In area number two, the Modesto and unincorporated county request, approximately 2,600 acres, includes several overlap areas between the two jurisdictions. There are three corridor areas, one, two, and three. Sorry for the quality of this map, by the way. The first, the smallest of 94 acres, is the North Carpenter Road corridor, adjacent to the existing zone boundary along North Carpenter Road. The second is the Sisk Road corridor to Salida, includes approximately 1,500 acres. This expansion extends along Sisk Road, including West Orange Board, Plaza Parkway, Prescott, Rumble, Stanford to Dale, Salida Boulevard, Pellendale, Stoddard to Technology Drive, and Bangs to Kiernan Avenue. It also includes, help me out, Ron, the former Shell site post properties, the Kaiser development, as well as Landmark. The City of Patterson application, which would be number three, includes approximately 940 total acres. This expansion request extends from the San Joaquin River along East Las Palmas Avenue to First Street, south to Sperry Avenue, west to Ward Road, and continuing westerly, including all of the West Patterson Business Park parcels along Sperry Avenue adjacent to Baldwin, and also includes the highway commercial at Villa del Lago at the I-5 interchange as well. Number four would be the City of Riverbank application, includes approximately 705 acres. The Riverbank expansion extends east on Claribel Road from Oakdale Road to Claus Road, including the Riverbank Army Ammunition Plant, north on Terminal Avenue along the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, including all industrial properties on the east and west sides of the rail, north to Highway 108, including commercial properties in the downtown. Like that's accurate. You know what I'm talking about, right? With that, with regards to those silly little arrows. East to 7th Street and west to Chippenary. And finally, the fifth expansion area, number five, the City of Turlock includes approximately 1,000 total acres. All the expansion areas in the Turlock proposal are zoned commercial or industrial. Majority of the areas are developed with businesses and facility infrastructure already in place. The Turlock Zone expansion extends to include the Gear Road corridor, encompassing both sides of Gear from Syracuse northeast to Sunshine Way, includes the Golden State corridor from Canal Street north to Taylor Road, and the Monta Vista crossing at Highway 99 corridor west of Golden State Boulevard from Taylor to Falkirk, including an approximate 20 acres south of Falkirk and west of US 99 on Diane Drive. This first phase expansion of approximately 5,400 acres is comparatively 54% of the total eligible expansion. This large first expansion request reflects the intention to include as many eligible communities as possible, and that was expressed and extended to all 9 incorporated cities in this first phase. I want to mention that. Several communities have not yet sought zone inclusion. In subsequent expansion processes, these communities will have that opportunity to do so. Should the board approve the expansion request being proposed this evening, there will remain an enterprise zone reserve of approximately 4,654 acres. Again, the action items before you recommend the adoption of a resolution initiating the expansion of the Stanislaus County Enterprise Zone, Zone 40, by approximately 5,472 acres, and authorization for staff to prepare and submit a zone expansion application to the state of California, and that would be the Housing and Community Development Agency. Again, members of the Enterprise Zone 40 work group and all applicant jurisdictions are available this evening to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, thank you, Keith. Mm-hmm. Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I was going to add that ongoing discussions are occurring between Alliance County staff and the City of Oakdale. They weren't prepared to go tonight, but it's my belief that they will be prepared sometime in the near future.
Okay, thank you. Supervisor Grover.
That partially answers the first question I have. What about the other three cities?
Sure. They just weren't ready at this point, sir. We do have some pressure, extreme interest from particularly the Patterson contingency. There's several major businesses, high-profile businesses coming online in the Keystone and West Patterson Business Park. This is a process, while we can come to you and rather quickly streamline this, the process of phase one came before the work group that you created in February on the 4th of April. And here we are just a few days later. But from here, we'll clean these maps up and prepare them to the state, and there is some protocol and some process that will take place at the state level. So we wanted to try and move quickly with this first phase to take care of some of these efforts. There's a BRAC closure and an opportunity in Riverbank with regards to the ammo plant, and so we're just trying to be sensitive to those who were ready. Mm-hmm. We will come back to you as often as you'll have me and mm-hmm. And bring everyone else along.
Okay, and as we get closer to being out of expansion room, I think we need to keep it in front of the folks that would be considering adding on to their parts of it, that we're going to keep some of it in reserve for what may happen at Crow's Landing and what additionally may happen at Salida. So
okay, that's a very good
point.
The
closer we get, the more they need to be cognizant of that requirement.
Absolutely. It's a finite pie.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, this is approved. How long will it take before this is in effect and this is expansion area?
Oh, gosh. You can try.
Can you just guess at it?
Uh-oh, here comes the bad news. Oh, good news, I mean.
Doug Sweetland with the Alliance. In answer to that question, we don't know.
That's a perfect one for him to fly.
It is, yes. What we have been told, this will be submitted to HCD, Housing and Community Development, and we have been told 30 to 45 days from the date of submission. However, the state legislature right now is looking very extensively at the Enterprise Zone program, much of which is being put in front of the HCD staff to respond to the legislative recommendations. What we're hoping for, that with the submission of our expansion, that it's not put aside. In other words, we're going to have some lobbying that we need to do to make sure that this expansion effort is kept at the front of their pack, not at the end of it, in response to the legislature regarding the recommendations of changes to the Enterprise Zone program. So we're going to continue to push, and we're hoping 30 to 45 days from the date of submission. But, best guess.
Can they not approve this?
Certainly they cannot approve it. And certainly we hope it doesn't take the 20 months it took to get the original zone. But I think based on the information that we have, the information that we are going to submit relative to the entire expansion, which is relatively minor compared to the initial zone, I fail to see where they would not allow the expansion. They've done expansions in every other zone. Some zones have had as many as 22 expansions over a 15-year period. So I would fail to see where we would not be approved for this expansion.
Okay, thank you, Doug. Any other questions? And if not, we then need a motion for approval.
I'll move for approval.
Second.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So ordered. I'm going to take just a short five-minute break before we move on to the next two items. Session, and the next item on the are you on?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. Next item is item B12, acceptance of budget status of update behavioral health and recovery services.
Good evening, Chairman Simon,
evening.
Members of the board. I'm Denise Hunt, behavioral health director, and to my left is Linda Downs, our assistant director for administrative services, and she's going to help run the computer. Go ahead, Linda. During the 05-06 mid-year budget report, we noted to you that we anticipated a significant budget shortfall for this coming fiscal year, 06-07, in the mental health programs not funded by the Mental Health Services Act or Proposition 63. Tonight, we're bringing to you our proposal for how to manage this. First of all, Stanislaus County receives a portion of state sales tax revenue and vehicle license fees to support mental health services in our county. And state law limits the county's responsibility to provide mental health services to the extent resources are available. And this is connected to the fact that the state doesn't fully fund an additional allocation to help fund eligible services for people who receive Medi-Cal in our county. Behavioral Health and Recovery Services receives a general fund contribution as a maintenance of effort level of funding to be eligible to receive most of the state funding. So in addition to what's prescribed by law, the contract with the state that we have for Medi-Cal services requires the county to provide what they call medically necessary mental health services to eligible Medi-Cal beneficiaries. So the state tells us what kinds of services we can provide and what sorts of problems the individuals that we can provide those services to need to include. Also, we're required to provide emergency assessment of persons believed to be a danger to themselves, to others, or what they call gravely disabled, which is difficulty providing for their own food, shelter, or clothing, or difficulty accepting third-party assistance with those matters. So aside from those requirements, all other responsibilities to provide mental health services, including to those individuals who don't have health insurance or are unable to provide payment for services, are limited to the extent resources are available. A little bit of budget history. Behavioral Health and Recovery Services has faced progressively larger revenue shortfalls the past several years. And so for at least the last 3 or 4 years, we've been doing a number of things in terms of our budget to try to manage this. We've done a lot of cost containment, streamlining. We've done program reductions. Notably, in 03-04, we had a reduction in force of approximately 11 staff positions. And then in addition, we've been using what we call our fund balance, or savings, essentially, each fiscal year. At the end of this fiscal year, all remaining fund balance will be obligated, which will leave a structural deficit of about $4 million, a little more than that, beginning in fiscal year 2006-2007. Could you go back one? Maybe you can't. Okay. That's okay. I referenced a structural problem. And what that means and what I've talked about with our stakeholders is that that means that how we're put together and the structure of how we provide services actually costs more than the money coming in. Okay, so that's what I mean when I say a structural deficit. So why is this happening? First of all, the cost of doing business continues to increase while our revenues remain relatively flat. And things like rent, utilities, telephone, all of those things. We have about $6.1 million that is owed to our department and our county by the state of California. These are unpaid claims for services to children and youth who have severe emotional disturbances. And these claims date back to 1999, 2000, and go all the way up to 03-04. And it was at that point that we scaled back services when it became clear that we weren't going to get paid what the state owed us. They've deferred payment. They haven't said we're not paying you, but they've deferred payment for 15 years. Additionally, the impact of the California nurse staffing ratios on our behavioral health center always has played into our budget situation the past couple of years. The overall cost there is about $1.4 million additional each year. We had a situation at the end of last calendar year where we didn't have enough psychiatrists at the Behavioral Health Center to attend all of the patients that needed services in our acute psychiatric hospital. This resulted in us needing to cap our census because if we didn't have doctors to attend the patients, we couldn't admit them to our hospital. So when we did that, we needed still to find other beds in other counties. Other hospitals for those services because we're obligated to provide that level of emergency care. So we had to buy those beds. At the same time that we had fixed costs at our hospital, we had to cap our census. We couldn't get the revenue in there. So it was like a double hit for a period of several weeks. Over the past few years, the federal financial participation reimbursement rates for Medi-Cal services has declined. It hovered around 51% to 52%. This is the for every dollar that we bill Medi-Cal services, we get somewhere between right now today we get 50 cents back from the federal government, and that's matched with local or state dollars. The federal financial participation rates were hovering around 51% to 52%. They went up as high as 54.3%. For a period of about 15 months, and then they've dropped back down. So now we're at 50% and holding there. In addition, salary costs have increased, and the county cost applied charges have continued to increase. It's just, again, the cost of doing business has grown. So all of that contributed to having a deficit over time. So what did we do? When we noticed at mid-year that we have a serious issue here, we asked our mental health board to sponsor a community-based stakeholder process because we felt like we needed to ask the community, what do you think we should do? Give us some guidance about what you think are the priorities for our services in our community. We talked to them about our funding. We talked to them about the problem that we have where our expenses are exceeding our revenues and income. And frankly, the only remedy that we have is to either lower our expenses and or increase our revenues. And we asked them not what's important about what we do, because they think that a lot of what we do is important, all of what we do is important, but what are the priorities? What are the most important things? So they told us their top three priorities. The first one is they really wanted us to retain a full range of mental health services. They wanted to be sure that we had continued access to medication services in the community, to keep the services regionalized. In other words, don't centralize everything in Modesto, for instance. And they wanted us to retain and expand a peer recovery focus that has to do with paying attention to the fact that people with mental illness can and do recover. Second priority is family advocacy. We have a very strong and active family community in Stanislaus County, and they really value the advocacy services that we've put into place for families of people with serious mental illness. The third priority that they told us about was to continue to interface with law enforcement for people who may be in jail frequently, homeless, or in some way having problems in the community and have contact with law enforcement. So the department's challenge then, after getting this information from our community, was to take this information and to focus on the relatively narrow amount of discretionary funding that we have. We have a substantial budget in our department, but a lot of that funding is categorical. We're required to use it for certain things. So even though we had a large budget, not all of what we receive is something that we can actually use with discretion and make cuts that are going to give us the kind of structural fix that we need for our budget. So the first priority that the community told us about had to do with retaining services in the community. What we are recommending is to consolidate our staff into the population centers of the county, which are Modesto and Turlock. This would result in closing offices that we have now in Ceres, Eastside Regional Services is in Oakdale, and in Patterson we have a regional site. Now, this doesn't mean that we would not provide services in those communities. What it means is that we would close those sites but take services from the offices in Modesto and Turlock out to those communities. In addition, we're recommending that we're going to identify sites of partners in which to co-locate. For instance, in Patterson, we have a contract with Center for Human Services, and they have a fairly large office there in Patterson. We've had communication with them already about co-locating some of our, for instance, medication services at that site and using some of those office hours to be able to provide services by staff who actually are stationed in Turlock. So we would take services out. We wouldn't retain an office in the same way that we have it today, but we would have a presence in the community and be able to provide services to people who live there. So this would result in outstationing staff at a lower level in several communities. And our goal is not to serve fully two communities, Modesto and Turlock, and other communities less, but to decrease overall the level of adult and older adult outpatient services. And this is where most of our discretionary funding sits right now. We're also recommending to develop and amplify the peer recovery and support services. These are non-professional services, primarily voluntary services, volunteer services. We have a number of programs and groups and peer counseling available already. So we're talking about developing and amplifying those. And our intention is to retain medication services, in other words, access to psychiatrists for medication in all the communities. So we would outstation that service specifically, because that's what the community said was very important. Priority two, which had to do with family advocacy, we want to increase that, focus again on volunteerism, and work with our National Alliance of Mentally Ill, the Stanislaus chapter, which is called NAMI, and really grow our volunteer service there. The third priority had to do with interface with law enforcement. We have some efforts already that are very promising and very positive, and we propose to continue those and actually increase that. Some of that effort is funded by the Mental Health Services Act, Prop 63, so that will help support those efforts. But that isn't enough to reach our target of what we need to change. We're also proposing to shift some mental health staff to alcohol and other drug prevention funding to develop some increased prevention services. We looked at every manager in our department. We redistributed and consolidated some duties to decrease the number of management staff. We've made a few reassignments. We're deferring filling a manager position. In coordination with the CEO's office, we're reviewing the possibility that another department in the county assume responsibility for the Children's Council. We're recommending to decrease staffing in the Office of Public Guardian and decrease the fund balance contribution to the Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center, our hospital. In addition, we have a number of cost containment efforts, business streamlining, some support staff reductions, and we're looking at reordering some of our Mental Health Services Act budgeting. And we believe that with all of these actions, we think we can achieve a reduction of about $4.7 million for fiscal year 2006-2007. This would be without a significant reduction in force or assistance from the County General Fund. There will be a reduction in mental health services in our community as a result of these actions. In addition, 25 to 30 employees will be required to transfer from their current jobs to other BHRS positions, and many of those are funded by the Mental Health Services Act that is bringing a little over $4 million of funding per year to our county. If we didn't have that, we would be looking at significant reductions in force in order to deal with the structural budget problem. There will be one, at this point, we believe just one position that would result in a reduction in force. So what you have in front of you here is a table that shows the consequence of reducing the Ceres Regional Services, Eastside, and Patterson. You have the cost reduction on the left and the number of residents affected on the right. I should make a note that the number of residents affected is on at a point in time. These offices actually serve more folks than 365 over the course of a year. So internally, the department's challenge is to manage all of those changes while bringing up a significant number of new programs. And this wasn't at all what we had planned. The Mental Health Services Act was a very exciting opportunity for our department to really expand and establish a different way of doing business. At this point, we're concerned about the impact that reduced services are going to have on our clients, their families, and our community. And these are reduced services in our core budget. So in the established behavioral health and recovery services budget, the Mental Health Services Act funding will come in. We will bring up new services. But at the same time, we're faced with reducing services significantly in our communities. I should make one note that the actions that we're recommending leave very little cushion and almost no reserve in our department. And it's our belief that we'll need to make some further changes over the next year in how we're structured in order to continue to essentially live within our means. So I expect that I'll be back at some point with some additional recommendations. What's in front of you tonight are these recommendations: to accept the update on our financial status, to approve May 16th as the date and time to conduct a public hearing, which is required when facilities that provide health services to indigent individuals are closed, to approve the posting in the notice of that public hearing, to establish July 1st, 2006 as the proposed effective date of the closure of those regional sites, and to delete one position, one deputy public guardian position, in our position allocation. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you, Denise. Just one observation is you stepped into a really tough job, and I know this has been a difficult decision for you to make, and you and your staff, but something had to be done, and you and your staff stepped to the plate to do it. So I know how tough it was. So
yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I would echo what the chairman said. You've done an outstanding job. Your staff has done an outstanding job of dealing with what, in fact, is next to an impossible situation, and I compliment you on that. I do want to point out to the board that what we are addressing today are core services. We still have the underlying issue, the Stanislaus Behavioral Health Center, that will be a discussion reserved for another day. The impact of this reorganization as proposed is approximately $1.4 million to SBHC in addition to all of the other factors that we're considering right now.
Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes, I know that we have $6 million in SB 90 money that the state has not paid us, but I wouldn't be sure. I heard you right. You said the state isn't going to pay us that money for 15 years.
That's right. They did that. They took that action in the end of 2004, Linda?
Yeah.
Proposition 1A.
Mm-hmm. It was part of that 2 years of $4.5 million and then the 15-year spread.
Yes.
That was a proposition that was competing with Prop 65, I think, that this board supported. Well, I'm glad I voted against it. So, and even in 15 years, and we have no guarantee that we're ever going to get that money, really.
That's true.
Okay, I just wanted to be sure I heard that right.
Yes.
And the facility in Patterson, I know that's a large office. I've toured it before. It's probably larger than what's needed for the west side, you know, in all honesty. So where you're transferring services, you think you can provide an adequate level of service in Patterson?
Yeah. We'll be providing a reduced level of service to what we're doing now. Our hope is that we'll be able to provide the same level of service there that we do for adults and older adults in all of our communities. I don't think it will be adequate.
You don't? Okay. No. The facility that we have now would you agree that it might be a little bit larger than what is necessary for that area?
Perhaps.
At least in square feet. It's. Well, okay. And I assume that people from Newman also come to Patterson for services?
Yes. Yeah. And we go to them as well. That'll continue.
Okay.
Any other questions? Okay, we need a motion to accept the report.
I'd like to move acceptance.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So ordered. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next item, B13, consideration of a report from Clerk Recorder.
Chairman Simon and Board, Lee Lendergan, County Clerk Recorder and Registrar of Voters. And with me today, I would like to introduce the Assistant Registrar of Voters, Mark Lozier, who is at the PowerPoint, and the Assistant Clerk Recorder, Marvin Hackett, who is here in the audience tonight. I don't believe you've had an opportunity to meet them before. Almost daily, the elections office is challenged with new voting technology or with a new state or federal regulation that we must incorporate into our processes. Stanislaus County Elections Division has successfully met these challenges and in 2006 joined the handful of California counties that met rigorous federal Help America Vote Act, HAVA compliance standards, and met the January 1st, 2006 deadline. Stanislaus has the distinction of being recognized as a HAVA-compliant voting system county by the California Secretary of State, who will visit our county on April 27th, which is Thursday of next week, to address our status of the Help America Vote Act compliance. On June 6th, Stanislaus voters will experience the third stage of implementation of our new HAVA-compliant voting system. The first two stages included the move from punch card voting to optical scan paper ballots and implementation of Model 100 precinct count terminals at each polling location. The final stage introduces the AutoMark ballot marking technology. And for this, we have brought a PowerPoint for you to look at this evening. For the first time in Stanislaus history, voters with disability, and I stress, the first time in history of the world, in Stanislaus as in any place else, voters with disabilities and special needs will have an opportunity to privately and independently mark their own ballots. One voter assist terminal will be located at each polling location, and if we can start the slides at this time. The Clerk Recorder's Election Division has been focused on meeting the mandated requirements associated with the Help America Vote Act. One improvement to the county's ability to assist voters is the installation and operation of the election systems and software AutoMark Voter Assist Terminal. The AutoMark Terminal is considered a breakthrough ballot marking technology. It allows voters with disabilities and other special needs to mark a ballot privately and independently when using an optical scan paper ballot voting system. And this means that the voter themselves can mark the ballot independently with no help from anyone else. As you can see in the picture, the technology was developed based on input from not only election authorities but disability organizations. The AutoMark Voter Assist Terminal does not tally or store votes. This is very important. It looks like a touchscreen, but we want to stress to our voters in Stanislaus, this is not a touchscreen tallying or voting machine. It is a paper ballot marking system. The AutoMark is designed to provide privacy and accessibility to voters who are vision impaired or who have a disability or condition that would make it difficult or impossible to mark a ballot in the usual way. For example, if a person had such a thing as arthritis and couldn't hold a pen, this will help them, all the way up to when an individual is completely blind. In any event, they will be able to vote independently and privately. In addition, the technology provides language assistance to voters who are more comfortable speaking in an alternative language and have reading limitations. And you can see the picture there. They have earphones that they can listen to, and no one else will be able to hear them at the polls. Some of the features of the system include the following. Number one, elimination of overvoting. The AutoMark software has been developed to ensure that you can't vote for more than one person in a race or more than those candidates that are allowed to be chosen for each race. For example, here in Stanislaus County, we do have times in which, for example, school board members, it's vote the top two out of three or the top three out of four, and the machine will let you do that, but it will not let you vote for more than one person in a race in which only one person is running. This is one of the things that was specifically stressed by the Help America Vote Act because of the actions that took place in Florida in the 2000 election. It also minimizes undervoting. An undervote is when nothing is marked, and it provides a summary at the end of the selection for the voters to notice if they've skipped any races, and they're free to go back and push one of those buttons, goes right back to their race, and then they can remark it. It also has a wonderful opportunity for write-in candidates. And I know that a couple of our supervisors have practiced on the way in, had a chance to do some of the write-ins. It will not only allow you to use it like a typewriter on the screen itself, where you can just type in a name, but it will actually spell that name back to you and then articulate it and read it back to you so you know which one you put in. In this case, we're writing in Cherry Garcia. An audio function where blind voters and those with severely impaired vision can choose to listen to the choices through headphones is available to them, and you can see that there. For the most handicapped individuals, the most disabled individuals in our area, it has a spot where they can insert a sip and puff tube. So those individuals who are, for example, quadriplegic or not able to move and even touch the screen at all will be able to vote independently. This is a first in history. A Zoom feature enables the voter to increase the font size of each race listed on the optical scan ballot, and this may be especially helpful for voters who are sighted but have limited some type of limitations, or even if they just forget their glasses for the day. It can enlarge it large enough for them to see it very easily. As we said before, it has multiple language capability to assure that all Stanislaus voters have visual and audible ballots in Spanish and English languages, both. And of course, this is very important because under federal law, we are a bilingual county having to give all of our voting information in English and Spanish, and this takes care of that requirement. Each Stanislaus County polling location will have an AutoMark voter assist terminal for the voters. The upcoming June election will be the very first time this has been used in Stanislaus County. We are doing additional training for our poll workers. They're going to be being trained in two separate classes, one just on the equipment, and the second class will be on how to conduct a polled election at the polls. And the use of the device at polling assures that we are in total compliance with the Help America Vote Act. This federal law is very rigorous, it's very strenuous, and we have been able to equip each of our polling locations with one of these disability accessible voting machines. At the next election, we anticipate there will be 235 separate polls in Stanislaus County. Some of them will be double polled. However, they will each have one of these machines available to them. Policy issues, we have met the board's policy of efficient delivery of public services and meeting all of the new federally mandated voting requirements. Do you have any additional questions at this time?
Supervisor Grover.
I may have misheard.
But yes.
Did you
use anywhere? Okay. So they're new.
Are they proven?
They're proven in the sense that what they're doing is they're marking the ballot, and they're made by a copy machine company called Ricoh, so that they're the implementation of them, although technical and very complex, allows very easy use for the voter. So we are been assured that they will mark properly and be an easy use for our voters. In any event, what they're doing is not conducting any type of calculation. They are merely marking the ballot.
How many of their staff are they going to put on standby for us on the election night?
I don't have that number right now. I'll get that number for you if you're
interested.
That'd
be great.
Okay.
Thanks. Okay. Supervisor DeMartini.
Yes.
I noticed that you're buying 235 of these.
Actually, 250.
Okay. The report says 235 locations. That means you're going to have more than, you probably have,
we have
two
training
in some locations.
Yes.
And training.
And one thing,
$3.5 million, but what I was wondering is these things are $15,000 a piece, so almost. Do you have a secure place to store this equipment?
We are storing it in our warehouse. We are storing it in our elections warehouse. And the dollar amount that you see on this document is for the entire system, so it included everything that is involved in making us compliant with the Help America Vote Act, not just these machines.
The storage place is County Center 3?
That's correct.
Because, I've looked at one of these machines. They are a complex piece of equipment. I have concern whether that storage facility is suitable for a machine like that.
I'd love to talk to you about getting a new storage facility. That'll be the next time I come before you.
Because it's a complicated electronic machine. This is not like what we've been using in the past. I would think that they would be moisture sensitive and they would have to be stored more carefully than anything we've ever had in the past, I guess.
They have the ability to be stored in the warehouse that we do have now. That's what we've been advised and assured by the vendor.
Okay. He's warranting these machines?
They're warranted, Yes.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Need a motion? Do we need a motion of acceptance of this?
Yes, accept the report.
We need a motion to accept the report. Do we have one yet?
Well, staff recommendation says to consider the report, but I think it probably should be to accept. I'll move to accept the report of the clerk recorder.
We'll accept that as a consideration. Do we have a second?
Sure, I'll second it.
Motion is second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So ordered.
Thank you.
Thank you. Correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Regional Council of Rural Counties requesting a resolution of support for reform of the Federal Endangered Species Act.
We refer this to the Department of Environmental Resources, Fish, Wildlife Commission, and Ag Commissioner.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
We acknowledge receipt of these claims and refer them to the Chief Executive Officer, Risk Management Division. Any board member have a report? Supervisor DeMartini?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Normally, I don't comment about the editorials, but I think I'll make an exception in this case, criticizing the board and our CEO over stopping a belly dance program at the county libraries. It was just last month that a spin dating was stopped at the Salida Library, and I thought that that would be the last problems we had at the library. And sure enough, this next month, here comes a belly dancing program at another library. And I would disagree with the bee, and I think that we are right in limiting what can be done at the library to literary functions rather than something like this. And I would mention that this county was going to be charged $250 for this belly dancer. I don't think that that's appropriate use of the funds, and I will back up our CEO for putting an end to it. And I hope that we never see something like this that's inappropriate at our libraries again. We have asked the citizens of this county to give us a 1/8 cent sales tax increase just to fund these libraries. And we should use these libraries for literary programs and not spin dating and belly dancing.
Any other member have a board report? Okay, legislative, fiscal, and management report.
I think I'll pass tonight.
Good. Thank you very much. Okay, this board meeting stands adjourned.